It's Thursday, December 10th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. You know, it's not too soon to start making your plans for the high holy holidays. No, I'm not talking about Christmas, Kwanzaa, or Festivus, or Hanukkah. I'm talking about 420. That's right, April 20th, 2010. I just received an email today from the Student Programs Board at the University of Washington, just north of me in Tacoma, inquiring about my availability for 420 and whether I could come up and deliver a speech and a presentation. So my plans may already be set. In fact, the only bad thing about the whole thing would be having to drive up the I-5 corridor on a weekday, but I'm sure I'll find a way to get through it. Also, I want to let people know about Ladies Night on Normal Show Live. Coming up this Saturday night, we've got a special all-female, well, aside from me, an all-female show on Normal Show Live, taking a look at marijuana and women in marijuana law reform. It's been a pretty popular topic since the debut of that Stiletto Stoners article in Marie Claire magazine. We'll be joined by Miko Hester Perez, a young mother who is using cannabis to treat her autistic son. Dr. Julie Holland, who wrote the book Weekends at Bellevue and spent a lot of her clinical time working in the psychiatric ER at the Bellevue Hospital. You've seen her on the Today Show defending medical marijuana in that Stiletto Stoners report. And many of my friends from Normal chapters all across the country, including Tanya Davis from Ohio, Cheryl Schumann from Beverly Hills, Linda Adler from the U.S. Virgin Islands, Ann Davis from New Jersey, and many more will be joining us this Saturday night at live.normal.org discussing women and cannabis. And you can ask your questions and get involved in the conversation by dialing 347-994-1810. Now, coming up on your daily audio stash today, we begin with your cannabis community calendar, and then it's a look at our hemp headlines, including political news from the state of Nevada, where MPP is going to try once again to pass a legalization referendum. We look to Colorado, where a new restaurant has opened called the Ganja Gourmet, and in Pennsylvania, where Jewish leaders are speaking up for the passage of the medical marijuana bill in that state. Today, our Daily Toker Tunes are brought to you by John Doe Radio, and it is Groovin' Thursday. We'll be hearing from Pace One and Mr. Green and their song, Children Cry. And for our cannabis conversations today, we begin a new segment where we talk to members from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, better known as LEAP, available out there at copssaylegalizeddrugs.com or leap.cc. Today, Jim Gearock, a former prosecutor in Cook County, Illinois, joins us to talk about ending marijuana prohibition. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
There were 765,000 marijuana arrests in 2007. That's not for dealers and kingpins, no, that's just for simple possession. Multiply that by the average cost of each arrest, and what have you got? $7.6 billion spent on people just smoking some pot. That's enough money to buy health insurance for every child that needs it. That's enough cash to adopt every stray dog and enough left over to feed it. Mr. Obama, I kinda wrote this song for you. You got my vote for change. Now let's see what you can do.
Roll me something fat and long. Pack me a boat or fill me a bong. It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
It's time for your cannabis community calendar, available online at normal.org/calendar. To get your events added to the calendar, send me an email with the subject calendar request to stash@normal.org. On Friday, December 11th, the THCF Clinic in Southfield, Michigan will be seeing patients. Michigan Normal wants to let you know about that. Michigan Normal also will tell you about the Houghton Lake THCF Clinic on Saturday, December 12th. This will be at the East Bay Lodge. For more information, call Randy at 989-366-5910. Also on Saturday, December 12th, Macomb County Normal in Michigan will be having their holiday meeting. Check out mcnormal.org for information. Miami Valley Normal in Ohio will be having their meeting at 5105 Deerfield Boulevard inside Seattle's Best Coffee Cafe in Mason, Ohio. And Normal of Waco, Texas will be having their meeting at Smoke and Rays in Waco, Texas with a special guest speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Oregon Normal will be presenting the 8th Annual Oregon Medical Cannabis Awards on Saturday, December 12th, featuring a grow seminar from High Times Senior Cultivation Editor Danny Danko and a presentation from spoken word artist Santee Sioux activist John Trudell and Bad Dog. For more information, check out ornorml.org. And finally, on Saturday night, Normal Show Live goes on the air at live.normal.org, 6 p.m. Pacific, with our special feature on women and cannabis. On Sunday, December 13th, there is a Cannabis Holiday Health Fair at the Holiday Inn, Denver. Mile High Normal would like you to know all about that. And also on Sunday, December 13th, Macomb, Oakland County Normal will be having their Compassion Club party at the Oasis Cafe. You must be a Michigan medical marijuana cardholder to attend. Also on Sunday, December 13th, a new special on the National Geographic Channel entitled Narco State will be shown on cable and satellite TV at 8 p.m. Check your listings for the channel. Next week, starting on Monday, December 14th, the THCF Clinic will be traveling all across the state of Michigan with Dr. Eisenbud. Check out minormal.org for more details. And next Thursday, December 17th, Philly Normal will be having their open meeting at the A-Space, 4722 Baltimore Avenue in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. One more note on the calendar. There will be no episodes of the Daily Audio Stash on December 24th, 25th, or December 31st, or January 1st, and there will be no Normal Show Live on Saturday the 26th or Saturday, January 2nd. In their place, on Thursday, December 31st, there will be a special 3-hour live combination Normal Show Live and Daily Audio Stash taking place from the Oregon Normal Cannabis Cafe New Year's Eve party. It begins at midnight Eastern Time and continues to midnight Pacific Time as we count down the new year in all four continental time zones. Joining us will be guests from all over the continental U.S. as they celebrate the new year in their time zone. Coincidentally, it will also be the 420th episode of the Daily Audio Stash since I began hosting it back in February of 2008. For more information on all of these events, including dates, times, phone numbers, email addresses, websites, and maps, check out the Cannabis Community Calendar at normal.org/calendar.
From Washington, D.C., the belly of the anti-marijuana beast, season's greetings from Normal staff and the board of directors to you and yours. This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal and the Normal Foundation, and I sincerely hope your holidays are both safe and hemp-filled.
Hi, this is Normal founder and legal counsel Keith Stropp, wishing you a happy holiday from Normal. Let's use this time with family and friends to rededicate ourselves to ending marijuana prohibition and stopping the arrest of responsible marijuana smokers. Happy holidays.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. MPP to try marijuana legalization again in Nevada. Carson City, Nevada, from the Associated Press. Backers of a move to legalize marijuana in Nevada filed paperwork Wednesday, creating an advocacy group aimed at qualifying an initiative for the 2012 election. Nevadans for Sensible Marijuana Laws are seeking passage of a law to tax and regulate marijuana in Nevada. Voters rejected other pot initiatives in 2002 and 2006, and a similar attempt failed to qualify for the 2004 ballot. Nevadans sanctioned medical marijuana use with passage of a constitutional amendment in 1998 and again in 2000, but voters in 2002 defeated a proposal to allow personal possession of up to 3 ounces. Another measure, allowing adults to legally possess up to 1 ounce, was rejected in 2006, but backers of that effort were encouraged by the support and pledged then to try again in Nevada. The 2006 measure failed 56% to 44%, buoyed by strong opposition from law enforcement. It also directed the State Department of Taxation to set up procedures to license and regulate pot growers, distributors, and retailers. The Marijuana Policy Project, a Washington, D.C. advocacy group, backed both prior initiatives. It is supporting the latest effort. Is it now some sort of requirement to get a grant from MPP to legalize marijuana that your name has to have the word sensible in it? Well, unless it's medical marijuana, then it needs to be compassionate. Maybe it's just me, but when I think of sensible, I think of shoes and the women who prefer them to heels. I'm just teasing. Of course I'm excited about the prospect of Nevada legalization. By waiting until 2012, they'll be able to see how the efforts in Oregon and California in 2010 will play out. But I think focusing on Nevada and not helping California and Oregon is a tactical mistake. I think people on the East Coast think of Nevada as some libertine frontier where the people openly accept legalized gambling and prostitution. Surely the folks who tolerate gamblers and whores will be open to legalized marijuana, right? Having lived in the Intermountain West most of my life, I can tell you that's far from the case. Aside from urban Las Vegas, most of Nevada is similar philosophically and socially to the rural areas of Idaho where I grew up. Socially conservative, religious, Mormons usually, or non-denominationals that I call cowboy Christians, and wary of big city out-of-state interests. They also have a strange, dissonant brand of libertarianism that hates government interference in their lives, but hates hippies and potheads even more, and approves of busting them for pot. The tolerance for gambling is an economic draw from outsiders, and the tolerance for brothels is part of frontier heritage. But marijuana is California, and free love, and liberalism to those rural Nevadans. And for those urban Las Vegas Nevadans, particularly the ones that benefit from casino money, marijuana is a threat to the bottom line. Pot smokers aren't aggressive gamblers like people getting free alcohol at the blackjack tables. However, my concerns may be moot. If California and or Oregon legalize in 2010, Nevada in 2012 is a slam dunk. Popular support for reform is growing every day and by 2012 may just be inevitable. I surely hope so. First, a cannabis cafe in Oregon, now a ganja gourmet restaurant in Colorado. But are they medical? From CBS4, Denver. A medical marijuana dispensary in Denver has decided to get creative and make the business into a full-service restaurant that caters to those who need to use medicinal marijuana to ease physical ailments. The owner of Ganja Gourmet, located at 1810 South Broadway Avenue, said the restaurant will, quote, aim to help distribute medicinal marijuana to those licensed to have it and provide an atmosphere where patients can visit with one another in a safe environment, end quote. Ganja Gourmet plans to offer lasagna, gourmet pizza, jambalaya, paella, chocolate mousse, and flavored cheesecakes, among other gourmet dishes. The restaurant will be decorated in a 1960s retro feel, including tie-dye attire for the employees. Steve Horowitz, an owner of Ganja Gourmet, said the restaurant will offer courtesy rides home for customers who feel they can't drive. Some neighboring businesses say it's just the latest proof that several blocks of South Broadway are going to pot. Quote, I don't think it's good for the neighborhood, an area business owner said. I think it's a joke that they're using the guise that it's medicinal. It just shows it's not medicinal, end quote. I'm not going to launch into a defense of the medicinal properties of marijuana or the value in ingesting cannabis in an edible form. That's an argument that's long been settled and really isn't at the crux of this anonymous business owner's comments anyway. What this comment reveals is a theme that we've heard in Oregon with the Cannabis Cafe as well. It's just a joke. It's just around as an excuse for people to get high and socialize. Obviously, it's not medical. It's not like a bunch of diabetics get together to use insulin socially. Well, yes, they do. Diabetics get together to use insulin socially all the time. So do pain patients get together to use opioid painkillers socially. And asthma patients get together to use their inhalers socially. You just don't see it that way because you don't notice those people using those drugs in social situations. You don't notice the diabetic taking a break away from the restaurant table to go to the restroom for a blood sugar check and some self-administered insulin. You don't notice the pain patient at the football stadium popping a Vicodin at halftime so he can sit through the second half. You don't notice the asthma patient using an inhaler at a rock concert. And you don't find them gathered and segregated in groups by use of medicine because they're allowed to use their medicine publicly. But the medical marijuana patient can't spark up a joint at the restaurant, football game, or rock concert. Well, maybe the rock concert, but you'd notice, right? Imagine if the only place diabetics were allowed to take insulin was in their homes. Imagine that if anyone sees them doing blood sugar checks or taking insulin in public, they could lose their right to take insulin without being arrested. Well, you could bet that these diabetics wouldn't have very many social outlets. They'd become prisoners of their homes, and the lucky ones may be visiting some of their diabetic friends for companionship in their homes, where they can medicate without sanction. Some, without friends, would become very lonely. In either case, they'd be missing out on many of the social opportunities healthy people take for granted. Research shows that isolated people get depressed, and depression can lead to other mental and physical health complications. Eventually, somebody would realize that there is a need for a social outlet for diabetics, and they'd create the Diabetics Deli, where there are free blood sugar measurement devices and patients can use their insulin on site. There'd be a special menu catering to the dietary needs of diabetics. Many of the diabetics would get healthier as they'd have access to blood meters and quality food they might not have access to at home. They'd feel better. Their mood would improve as they socialized and made new friends. As they band together at the deli, they'd learn how to organize and fight for their rights to use insulin without sanction. So, yes, cannabis cafes and ganja gourmets are medical, in the sense that they provide some of the few social outlets for a subset of people using a certain medication. We'd prefer that not just patients, but every adult could order a joint with their Java in certain public cafes, or a little slice of Chiba cheesecake in some public restaurants. But for now, at least patients can enjoy some manner of social outlet in a few states. Jewish leaders testify for medical marijuana. From the Jewish Chronicle. Damsker, a board member of the Jewish Social Policy Action Network in Philadelphia, testified in favor of House Bill 1393. Rabbi Eric Citron of Temple Beth El in Harrisburg, a conservative congregation, also testified that medical marijuana was consistent with Jewish values. In fact, medical marijuana enjoys significant support in the Jewish world. In addition to J-SPAN, which has a chapter in Pittsburgh, the Union for Reform Judaism adopted a resolution at its 67th General Assembly supporting its use. The conservative movement has yet to endorse medical marijuana, but Rabbi Elliot Dorf, one of the movement's leading scholars, has come out in favor, as have several Orthodox rabbis. Quote, "In terms of Judaism, we would see this as part of our charge by God to be compassionate and merciful and respond to our neighbor's distress," Citron said. "That's where we're coming from, ultimately. There's no indication in Scripture whether this, marijuana, should be legalized or not, but when we think of the commandments to treat our neighbors with kindness, love, and compassion, this is one way to do it," end quote. In supporting medical marijuana, the Reform movement cited several Talmudic sources for its stance, including this commentary by Maimonides, quote, "God created drugs and compounds and gave us the intelligence necessary to discover their medicinal properties. We must use them in warding off illness and disease," end quote. In Israel, people with cancer, multiple sclerosis, or certain other conditions can apply for a license to receive a free supply of medical marijuana. It is provided by a charitable organization, Tikkun Olam, which supplies it to some 700 patients. Tikkun Olam is a Hebrew phrase that means repairing the world or perfecting the world. I don't think I can better that as a general comment on this article. Please give your support to House Bill 1393 to give patients in Pennsylvania their deity-given right to use marijuana as medicine.
Are you or is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or is someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health, as well as legal issues. NORML even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. NORML, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. NORML is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana, connect with a lawyer in your area, or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at normal.org, that's NORML.org, or toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. Brought to you by the John Doe Radio Show, accurate and informative marijuana reform news and entertainment. Available on the THC Media Network and johndoeradio.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on the Daily Audio Stash, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
John Doe Radio.
John Doe with your Groovin' Thursday tune for the NORML Daily Audio Stash. From Newark, New Jersey, Pace One and Mr. Green form the classic hip-hop combo of one MC and one DJ. The true skills of hip-hop have been lost on the surface of the music scene, and unless you dig deep into the folds of the net to find what you're looking for, you may never come across hardcore hip-hop again. Or in my case, you're lucky enough to have the track sent to you. With digital production and the creation of music, the art of a turntablist has been somewhat lost. Classic hip-hop cannot thrive without the full instruments of its trade, just like any other genre of music. The voice of the MC in his lyrics and the DJ with his scratches and beats are the simple yet effective tools of hip-hop, and it's hard sometimes to distinguish which one gives more to the soul of the jam. Pace 1 brings you smooth lyrics, and Mr. Green pounds you with the beats to bring you what's missing from today's hip-hop: classic beats and classic rhymes. The latest album from the duo seems to fit in well with the normal daily audio stash, as being titled "The Only Color That Matters Is Green." The color of green can bring so many smiles to so many faces, no matter what type of green we're talking about, right? I'm right. I had a hard time deciding which song to include off the album, so I put one track on this week's JDR show and a different one with y'all here on the Groovin' Thursday audio stash. Toke up and enjoy this laid-back tune and underground hit, Children Sing, on the normal daily audio stash.
Spinning on cardboard, run up with a tech gun, open your car door. Muy Caliente, selling weed around my friendway, breaking bread with Diesel Don and Elder Sensei. And now I'm back to smacking you, rap until capital's made. Gats in your face, cop killer strapped to the waist. Easy goofy, catch a doozy for being a groupie. I got the Uzi that you only might see in a movie. Truly gritty, grimy, shifty, I'm witty, I'm silly. Really shiesty, but I'm chilly, it's Philly, you tiny. Mini minor, Mr. T, I'm a pity to rhymer. On call like Sean Paul, just give me the lighter. Pass the dro, master the flow, I carry on with 8Ks and cherry bomb ish. And on every song I get on, the Billy Idol of rap, talk ish, I lay you down right on your back.
Yeah, I'm getting good, I'm getting clever, I'm getting things right in my life, I'm getting better. I'm getting something for me, I'm getting cheddar. The girls are loving me now, they're getting wetter. I'm getting good, I'm getting clever, I'm getting things right in my life, I'm getting better. I'm getting something for me, I'm getting cheddar. The girls are loving me now, they're getting wetter. Split splash, I was taking a bath. Then I hopped out the shower, snatched up my do-rag. Started flipping through my stash, got cash in two bags. Then I hopped in the 528 with new mags. Spent out like a NASCAR race, putting my thing down. Proud like Return of the King, Lord of the Ring now. Fly like a 6'8", lacking chrome spokes. Straight talking that hip-hop, slighting grown folks. Like word, oh really, no doubt, no diggity. Spitting that East Coast street talk so wickedly. Authentic beat boy. Hip hop, no trickery. That's why my 16 bar scheme's so slippery. Up at least one raw today. And like Chingy, I'm only one call away. So if you're tired of the norm and you want more tricks, dial 3732146. And yeah, I'm there. I'm getting good, I'm getting clever, I'm getting things right in my life, I'm getting better. I'm getting something for me, I'm getting cheddar. The girls are loving me now, they're getting wetter. I'm getting good, I'm getting clever, I'm getting things right in my life, I'm getting better, I'm getting something for me, I'm getting cheddar, the girls are loving me now, they're getting wetter.
You see, I'ma just push and push until I get it, I'ma just push and push until I get it. I'ma just push and push until I get it. Suicide doors, G4s, and
say
good credit. I'ma just push and push until I get it. I'ma just push and push until I get it. I'ma just push and push until I get it. Suicide doors, G4s, and
yeah.
Good credit.
Before I pull up and park and bust in your apartment, I'ma just perm my hair like Al Sharpton and get a picket sign just to protest your flow next. Your little recent rhymes need Kotex. There's mad little tricks hidden up in my sleeve. Don't be naive, I had you screaming out, why me? You soft muffs, I'll come a dozen a dime. I'll fuck you up and walk off like it wasn't a crime. Stick my gun where the sun don't shine. How you fucking a nine? Half side of me stuck in your mind. You'll probably want revenge. Sneak up on me, stick a knife in my back. Take naked pictures of my body like they did in Iraq. And then wake up sweaty in a puddle of piss. I'll fucking bust your ish, call your brother a bitch. And then leave you where I met you, brother, holding your mouth, holding your jaw and arg and go over and out. Yeah, I'm getting good, I'm getting clever, I'm getting things right in my life, I'm getting better. I'm getting something for me, I'm getting cheddar. The girls are loving me now, they're getting wetter. I'm getting good,
I'm getting clever, I'm getting things right in my life. I'm getting better, I'm getting something for me. I'm getting cheddar, the girls are loving me now. They're getting wetter.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
Hi, I'm Keith Straub, the founder of Normal. In all the years since 1970 that I've been fighting marijuana prohibition, I've learned that drug warriors love to confuse the public with statistics. Lately, they've claimed that there are more teens enrolled in drug treatment for marijuana than ever before. It's a statement that, while true, is intentionally misleading. What they don't tell you is that marijuana arrests have skyrocketed to over 800,000 arrests per year. They also don't tell you that we've gone from a few dozen drug courts in the 1990s to over 2,500 drug courts today. The kicker is that those drug courts sentence teens routinely to drug treatment for marijuana, whether they need drug treatment or not. So they arrest more people for pot, require them to enter drug treatment, then claim the higher treatment numbers justify more pot arrests. It's an absurd proposition, but no more absurd than banning a plant. Learn the facts about pot. Visit norml.org today.
One of the most disturbing elements of the war on marijuana is how it has made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows firsthand the futility of the drug war and reaches out to the community and to current law enforcement to end our war on drugs through legalization. It's time now to speak to one such officer in our continuing look at law enforcement against prohibition. We're inaugurating a new segment here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash where we get the chance to speak to members of law enforcement against prohibition. Check them out at copsaylegalizeddrugs.com or leap.cc. Our first guest is Jim Girock, who is a former Cook County prosecutor and member of LEAP. And Jim, welcome to the show.
Russ, it's good to be with you.
Now, I mentioned you were a former Cook County prosecutor. I always like to find out what people's backgrounds are when they come to this topic of law reform in drugs. So, what is your background? Were you always a prosecutor or how did you come to this, issue?
Well, I started with the state's attorney's office in the early 70s, and worked in suburban courts, the grand jury, homicide court, and of course prosecuted drug cases during that period of time. I was there for 4 years, then went into private practice, representing cities, municipalities, libraries, tried zoning cases, just about every kind of case you could try.
Okay.
And my interest was drawn back to the criminal justice system because we were killing people like flies here in Chicago, which is the area I'm from, of course.
Okay. And in your work as a prosecutor, of course, you talked about prosecuting many drug cases. At what point did you start to see the futility of it? Was it something you'd always thought, or did it take time for you to develop this view?
Well, actually, in the early 70s, I was a gung-ho prosecutor and was in favor of prosecuting all drug crimes vigorously. And actually was to the point where I was to the extreme of harshness on drug prosecution, which was an aberration back at the time because people didn't think it was that big a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, my views changed after I saw that the harder you impress prohibition, the worse the problem, including the drug problem, becomes.
Right. And that's something that is a constant that we hear from members of LEAP, is that the prohibition itself just does not work. It's not solving the problem it was built to contain. In what ways did you see that personally when you were prosecuting these crimes?
Well, it's about the money. Prohibition makes something that grows on plants the most valuable commodities on the face of the earth. To illustrate the point, I once got a graph from the Drug Czar's office, the Office of National Drug Control Policy, that showed that the price of heroin was falling, the purity was increasing, and yet even at the reduced prices because of increasing availability, I took the price of heroin, compared it in the newspaper to the price of gold, and found that when I converted them to the same unit of weight, that the heroin was 122 times more valuable than the gold.
Hmm.
So I wrote an article that said we should take the gold out of Fort Knox and put the heroin in, and we have a successful drug bust. But the point I was trying to illustrate is that it's the money. We arrest some drug dealer here in the United States, go down to his place in Mexico, and we find $207 million in a bedroom. $100 bills waist deep, filling up two-thirds of the room. So prohibition is about money. The bad guys are in favor of it because it's the heart of the business, whether you're talking about Al Capone, Pablo Escobar, or any other killing people right in today.
Mm,
yeah. And the ironic part is the good guys are on the same side as the bad guys because they're also riding the drug war gravy train, although in a different way. We have 100,000 more policemen. We've got prisons coming out of our ears. We've got people who build the prisons, supply the prisons, transport the prisoners. We have more judges, probation officers, parole officers. We've got the guys in the drug with the drug testing concession. We got the laboratories. We got the helicopter spraying Columbia. We got the radio, television, newspapers that are collecting hundreds of millions of dollars a year to put on anti-drug advertising, which is like ringing the dinner bell.
Yeah.
So the good guys and the bad guys are on the same side of the line of scrimmage, which is why this drug war has gone on for 40 years, unlike the alcohol prohibition for only 13.
Hmm. You know, this is something I've brought up before, this idea about reducing the law enforcement expenditures, even if we just were to re-legalize marijuana. And one of the responses I got one time was that, that the law enforcement's, they're bureaucracies like any other, and bureaucracies don't give up their budgets or their manpower willingly. And there is something to be said for when alcohol prohibition ended, that the war on drugs then kind of became the jobs program for all those former alcohol agents. What would it take to actually reduce the police numbers and expenditures if we were successful in ending drug prohibition? Wouldn't they just try to reallocate those to different ends?
Well, right. I would rather have somebody building a school than building a prison.
Yeah.
I would rather hire somebody to teach somebody something instead of watching somebody do nothing, which is what we do with prison.
True enough.
So the difficulty is in a town, a suburban town here in Cook County, we build a new $4 million police department. We have very little crime. It's in a nice suburban area. But the town, the mayor and the trustees got to put up a $4 million building without taxing the people because of the forfeited houses, cars, planes, cash that come from their half of the drug war bounty that's recovered.
Hmm.
So it's hard to convince a mayor or an alderman that we shouldn't have this war on drugs when they're benefiting.
Good point. Now, I was following a story out of California, and this is every year they have that campaign against marijuana planting. They send police out into the forests with helicopters, getting them paid overtime to rip up weeds, basically.
Sure.
And again, this goes back to your point about about, you know, the gravy train. It's an easy job for an officer to go out there and go weeding. And this one sheriff, his name is Sheriff Hansen out there in California, actually said that part of me wants marijuana legalized because it would take away the wealth and the greed and the violence, but you couldn't just do it in just California because then people from all the other states would come to take advantage of it. In trying to end this prohibition, how do you see it happening? Would it have to be a state by state thing, or, and what about this idea that we'd have one state legal and the others not, and that causing an interstate problem?
Well, I mean, ideally we would see it end everywhere, but I think the likelihood is that if we end up with a state by state dismantling of the drug war as we did with the alcohol prohibition, people will feel more comfortable with that type of an approach. You may have a more regressed state that's going to say, no, we're going to keep prohibition in effect, and you may have another state that says we're going to legalize marijuana only, another state that's going to say we're going to legalize all these drugs because they're too dangerous to leave uncontrolled and unregulated. And then we may see, well, it's working better in this state or that state, which will help spread a policy to all places. But it is true, when you lessen the penalties, decriminalize or legalize on one side of a borderline, you create the temptation for people on the prohibited side to come across the border to get the drug.
Mm. You mentioned some of how both sides of the war on drugs are working on the same line, the same side of the line of scrimmage, and you know, the idea that the police departments and all these other drug war industries profit by keeping drugs illegal. But at the police, you know, at the level of the average police officer or average prosecutor, how many of them do you suppose are really thinking that way versus how many of them really think what they're doing is right, that what they're doing is succeeding and it's a moral imperative?
Well, I think overwhelmingly law enforcement personnel think that they're doing their job by enforcing the law as legislators have written it. But I think almost universally in their hearts, they must know, as all Americans, or at least the vast majority of Americans know, is that the drug war doesn't work. It doesn't stop drugs. It puts uncontrolled, unregulated, contaminated drugs that people are using. They have no idea what it's been cut with, what the potency of it is, and it causes universal devastation in whatever part of the country that you're in. So I think the police officers' hearts are in the right place, but the mission they've been given is a bad one.
Yeah, and this brings me to something I hear sometimes from law enforcement when they'll say to those same ends, you know, we don't write the laws, we just enforce them, and that if we want to, you know, have them not bust people for drugs, we need to get the laws changed. And yet when we go about trying to change the law, it's always law enforcement lobbies that are there fighting against us, where that kind of makes me seem like you do kind of say something about writing the law rather than just enforcing it. Any thoughts on that idea?
Well, to give you a similar example, here in Illinois, we have 45,000 felony inmates locked up in the penitentiary system. We build one new prison every year through the 1990s. We've got 32,000 of those 45,000 that are nonviolent. Minor crimes, minor drug, minor theft, but nonviolent crimes. Our governor tried to release 1,000 on an early release program, is sued by the AFSCME union, saying that you can't reduce the number of prisoners because it'll reduce the number of jobs and overtime and benefits, which you can't do without renegotiating the labor contract.
Oh, my.
So you've got Governor Schwarzenegger with 175,000 prisoners in California trying to reduce the population by 75,000 and who are nonviolent and, of course, hitting nothing but a brick wall.
Hmm. Yeah, that's.
I mean, it's a financial interest. Somebody's bread is buttered on the side that they're in favor of.
So what sort of jobs are we going to get for all of these prison guards and police officers and prosecutors once we do succeed in ending prohibition?
Well, we're talking about high speed rail across the country. Let's build a railroad. Let's restore the woods. We've got the infrastructure of our country falling apart. Let's put it back together. Let's reforest the country. We used to have in the 30s during the Depression programs that put people to work, number one, because there were jobs to be done that would be beneficial long term, and people were put to work. We're having troubles economically now. Maybe we'll get get to the same point.
It's a great thought. I like that idea of redirecting all of those resources, both manpower and money, toward programs that could help this country rather than tear it apart. Jim Girax, a former prosecutor in Cook County and a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, what will you be doing in the next few months? Are you going on any speaking tours or appearing anywhere where people could find out more about you?
Well, I mean, one of the quick ways to find out more about me and LEAP is to go online to just leap.cc. You just type in LEAP for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, but LEAP.cc. And you'll see articles that have been written by our speakers. I have a PowerPoint presentation under publications and then a subheading publications that that I think makes a strong argument for ending prohibition, certainly of marijuana, where we have 900,000 people arrested a year ridiculously, when we could do so much more with the money that's constructive.
Oh, Jim, thank you so much for your perspective. I know my audience really enjoys hearing from people who've been working on the front lines and dealing with the drug war who realize it just doesn't work. Thanks, and we'll have you back again sometime. Thanks for joining us.
Well, great, Rod.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent.
We leave you today with the reminder that you've only got 2 weeks of Christmas shopping left, and what could be a better present for that 420-friendly friend on your list than something from Normal's online shop? That's right, check it out at normal.org, and you'll find all sorts of great holiday specials on t-shirts, stickers, buttons, and more, all featuring the famous Normal logos or marijuana leaves or many other designs that are a little more subtle. Check it out at normal.org and also check out the Cafe Press store at cafepress.com/normal. Your purchases help to support Normal and the Normal Foundation, and that helps us to continue this podcast and spread the growing truth about cannabis nationwide. Do your holiday ordering now so that you can get your presents in time for Christmas. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.